Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
It's 6:04. Welcome to it. I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8, where we seek to be informative and challenging, hopeful and helpful as you get your day started. We've got some great guests lined up later this morning. Leslie Vernick, no stranger to listeners of this network. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the good work of counselor and author Leslie Vernick. She'll join us in just about half an hour from now. With a great piece that she's published entitled simply 10 Truths Every Christian Needs to Know About Marriage. Now, we will talk a fair amount about marriage later in the program. The fact is, we are just bombarded right now with news headlines reporting trends on marriage in the United States. And if you believe that marriage is an institution that is established by God, if you believe that marriage is an institution that actually brings benefits to the broader society, if you believe those two things, well, you're probably a little disheartened, shall we say, by the current trends in marriage. It's not so much about, half of all couples end in divorce. We, I believe, have refuted that to some degree with the great author Shanti Feldhahn, who was on our program just last week, actually. Shanti Feldhahn, a prolific writer and a researcher on the topic of marriage. And she's kind of shot holes, so to speak, in that notion, that platitude, that half of all marriages end in divorce. That's just factually, statistically, not the case. But if we look at attitudes towards marriage among younger demographics in our society, even Christian young adults in their teens and 20s and 30s and such, the millennial generation, if you will, their beliefs and attitudes and dispositions towards marriage do not bode well for the institution of male, female, man, woman marriage. So Leslie Vernick will shed some light on that subject and talk to us about 10 truths every Christian needs to know about marriage. Things that those of us who've been married for a long time, we probably could use a refresher course. And we appreciate Leslie's presence here on the program. Also, later this morning, we'll check in with Dr. Richard Land. Dr. Richard Land, a great professor and theologian and pastor, formerly of the Southern Baptist Convention. He'll talk to us about some of those very issues pertaining to marriage. And as we continue in just a moment here, we got into this in somewhat in the top of the hour newscast that you just heard on your local affiliate radio station. There are multiple reports indicating that we are right in the midst of what some people describe as the worst outbreak ever of Ebola. The worst outbreak of Ebola ever in the history of the world. And there are growing concerns that this is something that we may be facing right here on our own North American continent. It's not just something over there, even though we should care about what goes on over there, wherever there is. This is something on our own continent here in the United States and in Canada. I'll tell you what we know about this as a public health concern coming up at this moment here. It's 6:07, and you're listening to Austin Hill in the Morning. Great to have you with us on the Faith Radio Network.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning, 6:09. By the way, it's a rare thing where we play the same musical interlude going into a break and coming out of it. I requested this, actually. Can you crank this up here, Aaron? I want to hear a little bit of this. This actually leads us to another point of discussion that we'll get to later this morning, and that is the re-release of a new movie called Left Behind. Go ahead and crank that up. No, Now, that was the theme song to the motion picture Left Behind that came out, I want to say back 2000, early 2000, maybe late 1999. But that's a phenomenally successful book series and such. And if you haven't heard this already, there is a new updated version of Left Behind, the motion picture, a film ostensibly about... I want to say this very carefully here. I'm treading lightly here. It's a motion picture about various theories pertaining to the rapture. And we'll get into this a little bit later this morning, but there is this new version. I think it's probably going to be, the production value will be better. The original one back in 2000, 14 years ago, one of the lead star actors of it was Kirk Cameron at that time. And I actually, just a couple of years ago, went back and watched that for the first time. I missed it the first go-around, but I went back and watched that, and it was okay. It was very interesting and probably adequately captured and conveyed what many people believe is a correct interpretation of mostly passages from the New Testament. I'm thinking of mostly predictions of the future, eschatological sorts of ideas captured, and some of the epistles written by the Apostle Paul, and things that are to come, you know, the prediction of future events and such, the rapture. And so here we are just a few weeks away, I believe, actually just a few days away, from the release of yet another remake, if you will, of the Left Behind motion picture. And there are numerous people from theological seminaries and pastorates around the country who are kind of weighing in saying, wait a minute, this is not necessarily this idea of the rapture as it has been characterized in Western Christian churches down over the last many decades, at the very least. This is not necessarily the way it's all going to happen, so to speak. This is not necessarily the be-all, end-all. And in fact, I noticed there's a big story today in ChristianPost.com, a publication that I peruse on a regular basis. And it's quoting a gentleman named Dr. William Lane Craig. He is a philosopher, and he's actually a professor at Houston Baptist Seminary, and also has some ties. He heads up some of the research that goes on in the Department of Philosophy at a graduate school called Talbot School of Theology at Biola University in California. So Dr. William Lane Craig, and by the way, that's where I went to grad school, at the Talbot School of Theology at Biola University. Dr. William Lane Craig, by the way, was not there at the time that I was, so I've met the man, but I never studied under him or what have you. But he's a very prolific voice among Christians in America, I believe certainly among evangelical academics. And Dr. William Lane Craig is saying, listen, if you go to see this film, take it in and consider it entertainment, consider it interesting thought. And as a matter of fact, he makes a comparison between seeing the new Left Behind motion picture with maybe somebody who chooses to go view the Lord of the Rings motion picture. And he kind of characterizes it as though, you know, this is thought-provoking and should provoke and engender more conversations and dialogue and discussion, but this is not necessarily an exclusive view of what the New Testament tells us about the things to come, so to speak. So 14 years ago, Left Behind, the motion picture, just kind of swept evangelical America, and I would say the evangelical church movement around the world in many respects. I know I've got members of my own family who read probably every one of those Left Behind books in the entire series, with Tim LaHaye and his co-author and so forth. This time around, it seems as though people are saying, okay, well, we're ready for another movie, but let's look at this a little more critically. So let's just a little note. We'll get to that coming up into the 7 o'clock hour, some of the things that are being said about the expectations and the anticipated release of this new motion picture. We'll get to that a little bit later this morning. Now, when we come back, I need to update you on concerns about Ebola. We have some Christian American missionaries, in particular with the Samaritan's Purse International Relief Organization, who have been diagnosed with the Ebola virus, which is terrible. I mean, this is very, very deadly stuff. But there are growing concerns that we may very well be witnessing the emergence of Ebola on our own continent. perhaps in the United States, perhaps up in Canada, maybe both. We'll talk about that. And by the way, this has a whole lot to do with the surge of people invading our country at the U.S.-Mexico border. I'll tell you what's going on there coming up in just moments. 614, thank you for being with us. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Counselor Leslie Vernick joins us in just about 20 minutes from now with 10 things that every Christian couple should know about marriage. I don't know if we'll get to all 10 of them, but she's authored quite a prolific piece on this and very, very thoughtful ideas. And even those of us who have been married for perhaps many, many years, it would be worth your while to get over to our website at myfaithradio.com and maybe review it. I've been married for a long time. My wife and I have been consistent we're nearing the silver anniversary, quite frankly, for which I'm very grateful. And I find myself in need of refresher courses on a regular basis. But Leslie Vernick joins us coming up just about 20 minutes from now here on the Faith Radio Network. Now, to connect the dots, so to speak, on the growing concerns about Ebola virus actually popping up, if you will, here on our own North American continent, let me roll the clock back a really long time ago, about 3 weeks ago. I'm being kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek when I say a real long time ago. There was a debate that was kind of playing out in the media, actually, unfortunately, between two very high-profile, very prolific pastors in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, one of them is a gentleman named Dr. Robert Jeffress. He pastors a very large, was described as a mega church in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And he actually made some statements in a national TV interview on a cable TV channel about the border crisis, the invasion of adults and children streaming across the U.S.-Mexico border, and our U.S. government's apparent inability or unwillingness to try to stop it or do anything about it. And Pastor Jeffress actually suggested that our borders, the distinguishing line, the line that distinguishes U.S. from Mexico, he actually said that there is a moral underpinning for that. There's a necessary distinction between nations. Well, Pastor Jeffress was resoundingly criticized by another pastor in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, a gentleman named Dr. Frederick Haynes. Now, Aaron, if we could have the soundbite number one from Pastor Haynes ready to go here. This is Pastor Haynes criticizing, without naming him, without coming out and saying the name of Pastor Jeffress. It's Pastor Haynes criticizing Dr. Jeffress from the pulpit. Listen to this.
I think it's irresponsible to quote a part of the Bible and not see it in its full context. There's no way I think you can look as a faith leader in the eyes of children and your only response is, you know, let's build a fence and let's send you back.
Okay. That's Pastor Frederick Haynes from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. By the way, he was not in the pulpit at the time. He's speaking to the media at that point. So I had that wrong. My apologies. Here is Pastor Haynes labeling his fellow clergymen as one engaging in fear-mongering. Listen to this.
It's like we can't allow fear-mongering to get in the way of truth.
Okay, so this notion that the line that distinguishes our country from Mexico, actually saying that that's a good and necessary thing, that's fear-mongering, that's irresponsible. Here's Pastor Jeffress in a local TV interview in the Dallas-Fort Worth area reminding people that, you know, there is a biblical precedent for borders between nations. Listen to this.
I want to remind people that the idea of nations and borders is God's idea. Acts 17:26 says God is the one who has established the nation and its borders.
Now, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and that we had, a robust discussion here on the program about this whole issue. What is an appropriate biblical Christian response to this invasion of people flowing across the U.S.-Mexico border? And I would contend that both those gentlemen, both those pastors, And I don't know them personally, but I am predisposed to thinking highly of both of them for a whole bunch of very good reasons. Both those gentlemen have very, very legitimate concerns that they bring to bear. And I don't think they're adequately recognizing one another's concerns. On the one hand, you've got Pastor Haynes looking at this from a humanitarian vantage point. You've got children who are innocent victims of public policy that has gone horribly awry, and perhaps victims of some real misguided direction coming from their own parents and their own governments and the various countries of Latin America. You've got adults who are victims of those kinds of things as well. It's very difficult for me to say, yes, we should look a child in the eye and say, no room at the inn, you have to go back to where you came from. By the same token, Dr. Jeffress, his point that there is a biblical moral reason to distinguish between nations, one nation to another, that has great legitimacy as well. And we see this throughout the Old Testament and in the New Testament as well. The line of demarcation, if you will, the line that distinguishes one nation from the next, Israel and others, the line that distinguishes one nation from the other is legitimate, and it's there for a reason. Here is some news that has just kind of come into our awareness here over the last 24, 48 hours or so, that I believe actually gives credence and further impresses upon us, or at least should further impress upon us, the necessity of distinguishing lines that determine where one nation begins and the other ends. We have some concerns about an Ebola outbreak in the state of Florida. Now, it's interestingly enough, this news is not coming from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services or a state agency in the state of Florida, what have you. The Peace Corps announced yesterday that it was temporarily withdrawing several hundred of its volunteers in the countries of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone after two of their workers were exposed to the Ebola virus. And then they go on to say, we have concerns that some of our relief workers from the Peace Corps may have unwittingly returned to the United States and perhaps may be very well carrying the Ebola virus. Now, that's news that's not getting a whole lot. It's largely being ignored, but that actually comes to us from a local news publication, a regional publication, I should say, in the state of Florida. We also have some concerns, a report out today, that there may very well have been a woman who arrived in the province of Ontario in Hamilton, the city of Hamilton, Ontario, in Canada. Indeed, there is a woman who flew back to North America from another region of the world. She's in a hospital in Hamilton, Ontario, and she's been diagnosed with the Ebola virus. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm not trying to gin up controversy. I really am not. But here's two examples on our own continent of public health officials and even private hospital officials saying, we have an Ebola issue here. And so if that's not a reason to secure our nation's borders, secure the continent's borders, if you will, I'm not sure how bad it might have to get before we begin in the United States to take border security more seriously. Do we necessarily know that Ebola has come up to the U.S.-Mexico border? No, that's not what I'm saying. But when there's a floodgate open, you don't know what gets in. We'll talk more about this coming up. It's a very, very serious news with Ebola and missionaries with the Samaritan's Purse Group. We'll tell you about it. 625, this is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us.
Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning, 627. Leslie Vernick, counselor, author, speaker. She'll have 10 truths that we all need to know about marriage. She'll join us coming up in just about 10 minutes from now. Here on the Faith Radio Network, Connecting Faith is a program you hear weekdays at 12 noon Central Time with your host, Neil Stavem. And yesterday on Connecting Faith, Neil spoke with pastor and church planner Jim Belcher about his search for the roots of his Christian faith in Europe, which is, to me, just a fascinating discussion. Here's a little bit of that discussion from yesterday.
It was a season where we wanted to take a sabbatical and a rest. We had the amazing opportunity to take our family, our four kids. So my wife and four kids and I went and spent a year. And we spent the first 6 months in Oxford and then another 5.5, 6 months traveling around Europe. And we very much kind of, well, we certainly knew what we wanted, which was to go deeper into some of the heroes of my faith, some old, some in the 20th century. And we certainly had some questions about how community was developed, how faith was sustained, how people did heroic things in the face of incredible evil like the Nazis. You know, so Bonhoeffer and Corrie ten Boom and those sorts of things. So we were looking to be refreshed, to be encouraged, to be inspired. But we also were looking for a chance to help our kids develop what one writer calls an articulate faith, where they really knew how to articulate their faith. And those who can articulate their faith tend to own it more. And so we wanted them to be able to have a faith that they owned, that had depth, and wasn't kind of one-note Christianity, but kind of explored the, as you said, the deep and the wide of Christianity. And so we had certain themes we wanted to introduce our kids to. So what we did is we kind of put those down on paper. So here are the 12 themes of Christianity we want to look at. And then we figured out, you know, what was the best way to organize those. And we didn't know that going in. And part of the book, and I don't want to give it away, is kind of how that came about and how we kind of stumbled upon it providentially. The direction we needed to go, where we needed to go, where the money was going to come from. I mean, that was part of kind of the serendipity, the surprise of travel. So we had some general ideas, but the way it evolved and the way it came out was a surprise to us and, you know, a pleasant surprise. It was incredibly exciting. And I think the reader who reads it, it's somewhat of a travelogue, it's a memoir, it's biography driven. But I think there's a little bit of mystery, too. Like, where's this going and how's it going to end? And I think that's what pulls people through it.
Pastor and church planner Jim Belcher talking about his search for the roots of his Christian faith in Europe. That was on Connecting Faith with Neil Statham just yesterday. On today's program, Neil talks with Jody Watson about how getting your life free of clutter is godly. The godly virtues of decluttering. I like it. That's Connecting Faith today at 12 noon Central Time on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:30. I'm Austin Hill. As we continue, 10 truths about marriage that we all need to understand. We'll get to that next. The news is on the way. Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support of what we do. You can find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning 6 till 8. Coming up just about an hour from now, we'll talk about some of the changing, shifting attitudes towards marriage among younger demographics, younger adults in our country, talking about the millennial generation. We'll get to that coming up in just about an hour from now here on the Faith Radio Network. When you hear the word marriage brought up in conversations, quite often these days, you probably have to agree, it's in the context of a discussion about public policy. Are we redefining marriage legally in the United States, or are we not? The people of the United States say we want the legal definition of marriage to match the traditional historic definition of marriage. Courts say, no, we can't have the government doing that. That's kind of how the word marriage gets tossed around in the context of many discussions around our country these days. How are we doing with marriage in our own households, in our own families, and even in our church communities? Joining us to put a spotlight on that, our great friend Leslie Burnick. She is a professional counselor, prolific author, and speaker, no stranger to listeners of the Faith Radio Network. And she's got a very, very important piece that she's authored entitled 10 Truths Every Christian Needs to Know About Marriage. Leslie Burnick, welcome back to our program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Austin, for having me.
Good to be with you. Before we dive into some of these 10 truths here, I almost take it, and I think this is appropriate, but I almost take it the way you've written this is that, hey, these are really important truths about marriage that some of us who are a part of the body of Christ, we don't adequately understand them. Are we lacking an understanding at times of the essential ingredients of marriage, would you say?
I think we are. I think, you know, we don't really teach it well. We talk a lot about roles and, you know, function of marriage, but we really don't talk about how to repair and maintain a good marriage, and what happens when a couple is really struggling. What tactics do we take? And we often take the wrong approaches to resolving marital conflict and dealing with really hard marital problems. And so I wrote this not only for people who are in the marriage, but people who are in the church who are going to support or hurt couples who are struggling in their marriage.
Very interesting. I want to zero in on one of the 10 truths here. This is actually listed as number 3. All marriages experience angst, disagreement, and struggle. Boy, isn't that the truth? But that kind of shatters a whole lot of false assumptions right there from the get-go, I would say. Comment on that if you would, please.
Well, I think sometimes when people go in, they think that if they're Christians, you know, and they are in love and they have these great feelings, that they won't hurt each other, they won't have hardship, they won't be disappointed. And, you know, as I tell my premarital counseling clients, nobody gets all 52 cards in the deck when you marry somebody. So it's really important to know which cards are missing. And if you're okay with that, because you are going to be disappointed that this person isn't perfect, they're going to let you down, they're going to hurt your feelings, they're not going to be able to do everything you want or meet every need you have. And it's really important to go into marriage knowing that, because we have these totally unrealistic expectations when we watch shows like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or all these romantic shows or read these kind of books, that this person's going to fulfill me and, you know, make me so happy for the rest of my life. And that's just not true.
Leslie Vernon, do you see it ever being the case that the disappointment sort of happens gradually over a period of time, like maybe 10, 15 years into a marriage or however many years it's been, you have one spouse saying, well, I never knew that about her, or, oh my goodness, I never knew he was like this. People discover things about their spouse, flaws and imperfections, maybe several years into the relationship.
Well, absolutely, and not only that, but we change. I mean, you were not. I don't think you're the same person you married when you married at 20 that you are at 40. And so people are different. They assume different values. They, you know, learn new things. They, you know, become a Christian or they lose their faith. And there's different things that happen in the course of a marital journey together. And so you have to understand that this is not just a static relationship. It's an ongoing, changing relationship. And hopefully the couples are growing together and they're growing in their faith and they're growing in their character in a good way, but sometimes that doesn't happen, and so you do get some surprises.
Leslie Vernick, author of a very prolific piece, 10 Truths Every Christian Needs to Know About Marriage. She's our guest on the Newsline here on the Faith Radio Network. Leslie, I'm struck by this point that you write in your piece. When a person or a spouse respectfully speaks up against injustice and oppression in a marriage, God is with them. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, sometimes we have silenced the person who's trying to speak up at church or with their pastor or with someone in the church saying, I don't have any free choice. I'm being treated like a slave. I'm supposed to just give in all the time. And when they speak up about this injustice, they're told, you know, don't gossip about your spouse. You know, you're supposed to keep marital things private. We don't. You know, he's the head, so he gets to make the decisions, and you're supposed to just submit. And so I think it's really important. Certainly there's different levels of that kind of thing going on in marriage. But when someone is very oppressive and the rules don't apply to them, but the rules apply to their spouse, like I can spend any money I want, but you're not allowed to spend any money. I work with so many couples where there's a lot of financial oppression. The woman's staying a stay-at-home mom. It was their choice as a couple to do that for the sake of the children. But then the husband sort of thinks that I have all the power over the money and you have no choice, and I'm not going to even give you an allowance. I will decide what you can spend. That's sort of oppressive, and it feels like a child-parent relationship or a master-slave relationship, not like two adult people who have made a good decision together and are working on those decisions and finances and child care arrangements together. And because one works and earns the other money and the other person stays home doesn't mean that one person gets to make all the decisions about the money. Mm. But that's what often happens.
Sure. Well, for the wife that feels as though she's living in that kind of oppressive relationship like you're describing, what are the steps that she would take to, at least hopefully anyway, try to put the marriage more on a course of mutuality between the husband and the wife?
Well, you mentioned mutuality, and that's a really important ingredient in a healthy relationship, is that both couples are being mutually contributing to the relationship maintenance and repair. But if a wife is feeling that or a husband feels that, I think the first step is to talk to their spouse, you know, to say, this isn't working for me. I don't like it this way. This feels very oppressive. I feel like I'm your child, not your spouse or not your partner. And God wants us to be partners. And, you know, to speak up and to do that in a Christ-like way. Matthew 18 tells us, if you have something against someone, someone's hurt you or sinned against you, go to that person and talk to them. Unfortunately, in many situations, that is met with deaf ears or, you know, just more oppression, and so it doesn't work. But that is her first step.
Leslie Burnick, author of a prolific piece that we have on our website at mypatriotradio.com. It's entitled 10 Truths Every Christian Needs to Know About Marriage. She's our guest here on the Faith Radio Network. You note that every marriage needs some essential ingredients. Mutuality is one of them. In fact, you say every healthy adult relationship of any sort requires three essential ingredients, mutuality being one of them, reciprocity and freedom being the other two. Tell us about those.
Well, reciprocity means that there's a give and take in the relationship where power and responsibility are shared. Again, we talk about this control over someone in a dictatorship, in a cultish religion where one person is kind of the head and everybody else is, you know, having to not just submit, but morph themselves into what this person says they have to be. They don't have any freedom to be themselves, to disagree, to share a different opinion, to dissent, to challenge. And so I think that's what we're talking about. The reciprocity is there's this power and responsibility that's shared. It's not one person is over the other where the other person has no choice. And then that freedom comes into it where you have the freedom to disagree. You have the freedom to put your two cents into the argument and be respected for that. You're not just told to shut up or just told to submit or told you don't have a choice or you don't have any voice in this relationship. And so whatever relationship you're in, but especially in marriage, you need these mutuality, reciprocity, and freedom for it to be a healthy relationship.
And what do you tell the individual husband or wife that says, you know, well, we don't have that going on in our relationship right now?
Well, again, I think that one person can begin to change themselves. And when you're in a dance with someone, if you don't like that dance, the way it's going, you can say to your partner, you know, let's change our dance. And if they refuse, then you can change your dance steps. And that's where I work with women and men who want to begin to speak into the marriage in a different way. What do you need to change about yourself? How do you need to make different choices or stop accepting that you have no voice and continue to have your voice? And even if it's being shot down, what do you need to do when that happens? Because that's really important, because otherwise the very personhood of the individual in the marriage can become destroyed. They can become squashed, just like we see the result in cults or in prisoners of war, where you have no choice, no voice, no freedom. Your very personhood becomes destroyed.
Leslie Burnick, she is a professional counselor, prolific author, and speaker. On our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network, she has a very important piece that she's authored called 10 Truths Every Christian Needs to Know About Marriage. We'll continue with Leslie in just a moment. Stand by. There's more to it. It's 6:45. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill. Leslie Burnick is an author, public speaker, and a prolific counselor as well. She's authored the 10 Truths Every Christian Needs to Know About Marriage. Leslie, I wanted to follow up on some things you were saying a few moments ago, this notion that oftentimes when we get married and then we've been in a marital relationship for a period of several years, well, the person we married is different. We're different as well. We substantively and characterologically change over time. And you're describing scenarios where one spouse says, hey, I'm going to start working on my life and on my character, my soul, and growing and changing. Sometimes the other spouse chooses not to participate in that process together. It doesn't happen together. How do you address that as a counselor? If those of us who feel like we're in that situation, how should we address that with our spouse?
Well, I think that even if they're not choosing to change, that doesn't mean you can't connect on different levels and you can't enjoy each other's company and you can't do things together. But the more that you develop different interests and different values, especially it's not so much the different interest, because I think if you have the same values, then you can still, you know, connect at a deeper level. But when you start developing different values, for example, let's say that someone has the value of family, and that's really important to them, and so they want to do things as a family, they want to participate with their children, they want to have their grandchildren over, and the other person develops the value of, you know, I don't want to be bothered with that. I want to be free to function like a single person, like I'm not attached to anybody, like I'm, you know, I want to go out with my single friends, I want to have, you know, I want to go drinking, I want to, you know, gamble, I want to do these kind of things. I don't want to attach to their family like they may be used to. That creates a lot of rift, because it's not just different habits, it's also different values, that the things that were important to us together are no longer important to me. And that can create a lot of tension.
Leslie, in your piece, 10 Truths, that we're talking about here, you have some things to say about not only married couples who may be in need of some help with their marriage, but also those who offer help, pastors, Christian counselors, and others. How best can we better understand that that dynamic, that relationship between the helpers and those of us who need help?
Well, you know, I think that when a Christian couple's in trouble, and they're, you know, they know that they're in trouble, at least one person in the marriage knows that the marriage is in trouble, they often reach out. They reach out to their church. They reach out to the small group leader. They reach out to the pastoral staff, whether it's the senior pastor or the counselor on staff. They're saying, help, we need help. And I don't think that, I describe different kinds of marital help, but there's marriages that kind of have the bronchitis of marriage, the common cold of marriage. And that kind of help is, you know, let's spend more time together, you know, let's reorder our priorities, let's have a date night, you know, let's reconnect. And then there's couples who have the lung cancer of marriage, you know, real serious problems. And if they're not addressed properly, the marriage is going to die. And I don't think people helpers are really equipped to know what to do. They sort of apply the antibiotic of the bronchitis of marriage solution to the couple with the lung cancer of marriage. And that doesn't work. You know, when a marriage is in serious trouble, whether it's serious deceit, infidelity, pornography, abuse, those kind of things, and those are repetitive patterns in that marriage, having a date night is not going to fix those patterns.
Very interesting. What advice do you offer to spouses, individuals, and couples who are in a marriage, and they're listening to what you're saying and saying, well, I'm not sure. How serious is our situation here? What kind of treatment do we need, so to speak? How does the individual in that scenario that you're describing, how do they objectively analyze their situation?
Well, I think with the facts. I think that you have to look at the facts of your marriage and what is causing the hurt. Is it serious sin that God says is very serious, like lying, like adultery, like pornography, like abuse of, you know, physical abuse, emotional abuse, financial abuse? Are those the facts of the marriage? Or is it more we've drifted apart, we don't have great communication skills, we haven't been connecting very much lately, I'm not feeling very close to you, but there's nothing that's caused that per se other than maybe busyness and, you know, neglect, those kind of things. I think that's the difference. And so when you have some serious sins in the marriage and those sins are not dealt with, they're not acknowledged, they're not the relationship damage isn't repaired, there's no real repentance or acknowledgement of that, or if there is, there's an expectation of amnesty, like, okay, I said I was sorry, now get over it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about it again. The past is the past. But when you commit these serious sins in a marriage, the past isn't just the past. The past is the present, and until you work through that, it then becomes your future if you don't deal with it. And so it's very important to heal those wounds and deal with them in a proper way.
Hmm. Leslie Burnick, author of 10 Truths Every Christian Needs to Know About Marriage. You can find that on her website, but we've got it at myfaithradio.com. You can find information about her. And actually, you can hear this discussion on our website at myfaithradio.com, or we'll be able to very soon. Leslie, as always, we appreciate what you do. Thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to speaking again.
Thanks for having me on your show, Austin.
It's good to talk to you. 6:52 here on the Faith Radio Network. Now, coming up later into the second hour of our program, a gentleman that you probably know this name. He was for many, many years with the Southern Baptist Convention, Dr. Richard Land. He'll be joining us coming up at about 7:35 this morning to talk about trends with marriage as they pertain to really, we'll be talking about the millennial generation. Those are young adults ranging in age from late teens, 18, 19, 20 to early 30s, depending on which demographer you're looking at and depending on how the generations and the demographics are defined. That's kind of the age range we're talking about, late teens to early, maybe mid 30s. Attitudes and dispositions towards the marriage institution that are held by that generation in our country. What do we, when we look at that, what do we to glean in terms of what that means for the church? And is the church conveying the truths of marriage in a meaningful way? We'll talk about that coming up at about 7:35. 6:53, this is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Radio Network, Live the Promise with Susie Larson. That's a program you hear weekday afternoons 3 till 5. Yesterday, Susie Larson talked about the early years of marriage with prolific author Greg Smalley. Let's listen in on part of that conversation.
You know, Susie, we've talked about this a lot, but Aaron and I, you know, about 2 years, 3 years into our marriage, I thought we were done. She was mad at me. I was mad at her. We were both hurt. We were frustrated. Our hearts had really closed, and I didn't have a lot of hope. And yet, I tried to do everything within my power to fix that, to change that, to make that better, and it was not working. And I remember thinking, well, God, did I miss some sign? Well, maybe this is not who you wanted me to marry. You know, maybe there's something wrong with her. I mean, I had a list, trust me. You know, maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe there's something wrong with our marriage. I didn't know what to make of it. And the lesson for me in that time was that it was not going to be because of my efforts. It was going to be because of what God was going to do and what He did in our marriage. Now, we just celebrated 22 years. So
congratulations. And He has put a new song in your heart, hasn't He?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I know that I waited patiently on the Lord doesn't mean then we just sit around and passively. And I think there's the surrender. You know, you think of that television show, some war show, to where, you know, the commander is surrendering. It's just putting up my hands, I surrender, and just sitting back. I don't think that's at all what he means here. I think what he's meaning is that there's an active choosing of releasing, of giving up, handing over to God and say, not my will, but your will. Lord, you take this. I can't do this anymore. I haven't been able to figure it out. It's not going to be because of my efforts. It's going to be because of what you do.
With that comes an expectancy too, doesn't it? You roll it over
it
and
does.
Then you seek after God and have an expectancy that he is going to change because of how you're seeking him in this, you know?
Yeah, seriously. So I think that at some point we have to shift from relying on our own efforts into really letting God do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn that. That was not easy, but that I really love how this starts off by really being clear. That now it's not surrender in the stance of putting our hands up. It's surrendering with that expectation of here's what God's going to do. Does that make sense?
That really does. And it's got to be so hopeful for that person listening today who's feeling like there's no song. And I've heard, and I maybe you even said this, that usually around year two, people can start, like the honeymoon sense wears off and people start to wonder, did I make a mistake here?
Susie Larson with Greg Smalley yesterday on her program Live the Promise as they were talking about the early years of marriage. Now, coming up today on Live the Promise, Susie welcomes the money couple, Scott and Bethany Palmer. They'll be talking about some insights on managing money in a biblical way. That's Live the Promise in a new two-hour format, weekday afternoons 3 till 5 Central Time with Susie Larson here on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:58. Good morning. Welcome to a Thursday morning well underway. I'm Austin Hill. The news is next. Our program continues here on the Faith Radio Network.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning and welcome to the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for taking us along. Thank you for your support of what we do. We can't do it without you. Find us at myfaithradio.com. I'm Austin Hill here weekdays 6 till 8 in the morning. And coming up later this hour, Dr. Richard Land, a prolific voice among Christians really throughout the world, actually. He was for a number of years with the Southern Baptist Convention, as I'm sure you're aware. He's now, of course, with Southern Evangelical Seminary, a non-denominational theological seminary in Charlotte, North Carolina. Dr. Land will weigh in on what we need to know about the present state of the marriage institution in the United States of America, even specifically what marriage is amounting to among the millennial generation, young adults, who are a part of the church. So that's coming up at about 7:35 this morning. In moments, just about 5 minutes from now, Kim Cattola, host of the Cradle My Heart program, Sunday evenings at 8 o'clock here on the Faith Radio Networks, 8 p.m. Central Time. Kim will join us in just a moment. She's always talking about, quite frankly, very difficult and in the minds of some very controversial subjects, but she does it with such grace and dignity and honesty. So we'll talk with Kim about her program coming up in just a few moments. Also, later this hour, we need to, we'll address this on some level. Are you aware that there is a new version of the motion picture Left Behind that is soon to be released? I believe the second week of August, I think, is the release date. The Left Behind motion picture. That was something that came out, as I recall, I should look this up. I'm going from memory here. But as I recall, the original Left Behind motion picture came to us in early 2000. And you might recall that the motion picture sort of coalesced and, how shall I say, corresponded with the release of a multi-book series authored by Tim LaHaye. And anyway, the Left Behind motion picture was what it was back in the day. And, oh, okay, thank you. Aaron McIntyre on the other side of the glass booth here, he has said, correction, you are wrong, sir. It's not an August release. It is October 3rd. Well, thank you for saving me from that. Aaron's reining me in here from the edge of the cliff here. So thank you. Anyway, we've got a new Left Behind motion picture soon to be released. And this time around, I'll put it that way, this time around, some 14 years later, you have people at theological seminaries and even in some cases pastors, but I'm thinking of theological seminary professors in particular saying, you know, this is interesting food for thought, but what is portrayed here in terms of a prognostication of the end time scenario, the rapture and so forth, this is not necessarily the only interpretation of Scripture. In fact, I'll tell you about a professor from Houston Baptist Seminary, a professor of philosophy there, who's saying, you know, this is interesting entertainment. Read the Left Behind book, go see the Left Behind movie, and take it in as you might take in, say, for example, the motion picture Lord of the Rings. But understand that this is an idea, one of many ideas about the return of Christ in the end time scenario that's been a part of Christian history for about half a century or so, but it's not necessarily the exclusive view of what is to come. So I'll tell you about that coming up here in just a few moments. It's interesting as we are here nearing the release date of yet another re-release of the same picture, a recreation of the motion picture Left Behind. All this and more as we continue this hour here on the Faith Radio Network. Kim Cattola, host of Cradle My Heart, heard Sunday evenings here on the Faith Radio Network. She joins us next. I'm Austin Hill. It's 7:08.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
7:09, good morning, and thank you for being here on the Faith Radio Network. Cradle My Heart is a program, among other things, but it's a program you hear on the Faith Radio Network, Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time, hosted by our own Kim Cotola. She's authored a prolific piece, once again, at her website, cradlemyheart.org. You can find that at our website, myfaithradio.com. Writing about the physical bond between mother and child, the bond that lingers even after a child is aborted. Very sensitive and, in the minds of some, very controversial subject, but one that needs to be addressed. Kim Cotola joins us now on the guest line. Kim, welcome back to our program. Thanks so much for being here.
Good morning, Austin. How are you?
I am good, and it's good to hear your voice. This is such an important issue that you're addressing in your at your website. You'll be talking about it on your program this Sunday evening. Where do you begin this very, I'm sure in the minds of many, a very difficult, very sensitive subject?
Well, our guest this week is Vicki Thorne, and she is a quiet hero who really is responsible for, I think, so much of the healing model that exists within the church and within helping ministries today that are leading to recovery for women and men after abortion. She started this work over 30 years ago when really no one was thinking about the spiritual impact of abortion. Vicki had a friend who had gone through it. And actually had also, it's a unique story because her friend had been an incest victim. So what I love about that is, you know, often we stumble on the hard cases. We stumble on those, you know, abortions that are happening as a result of rape or incest. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, those are tragedies, but that's 1% of cases. We know that from the research. But anyway, Vicki knew such a woman, and they had been teenage friends. And when later in life this friend disclosed what she had actually experienced, she said that the abortion was much worse than the abuse. And she actually was forced to release a child for adoption in that family situation. She said the abortion was much worse than that forced adoption. She said the abortion is the only thing that I can't live with out of all of those traumatic experiences. And so Vicki made it her purpose in life to find answers and remedies, not only for her friend, but for the many that she knew were suffering. So it's a unique story, a unique approach.
Indeed it is. Kim Cotola, host of Cradle My Heart, the program Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time, here on the Faith Radio Network. She's with us right now. This is quite extraordinary. When you talk about pregnancies resulting from rape or incest, Kim, you know better than most, that's usually kind of the caveat scenario. Those are the caveat scenarios, I should say. Even when abortion policy is being crafted at the level of law, people say, well, okay, we oppose abortion except in the cases of rape and incest. And that's always sort of the out that whereby specific abortions in specific situations are justified. You're telling us that this guest on your program this Sunday evening is saying, hey, I was an abuse victim, but I can work through that. I can get over that. The loss of my child is far worse. Did I hear that correctly?
Well, she counseled a person in that situation, and so she really developed and learned best practices out of her deep love for this friend who had experienced that kind of loss.
Very interesting. Kim Cotola with the Cradle My Heart program, Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network. Kim, you mentioned fathers, and I know you've addressed this before, fathers that are biological fathers of children that end up being aborted. What is the lingering effect of an abortion on the dad, as you've come to understand it?
Well, men fall into two categories, as you can probably easily see as I start to show you this, Austin, that, you know, some men are sponsors of the abortion. They press for it. They may pay for it. They may even end up in that position as a default because of our culture that says it's a woman's right. And so men, thinking that the chivalrous thing to do would be to allow her that decision, often sort of fold emotionally and, you know, check out and leave her to make that decision and walk through the experience basically alone. That's the sponsor of abortion. The bystander is someone who wants that child, but he has no legal standing And so he also has no power within the relationship to stop the abortion. So it's a very different emotional road, as you can imagine, for, you know, the sponsor versus the bystander. But I think in all cases, abortion really strips a man of his masculinity. It removes him from that role of being protector and provider that God has ordained for men to have.
Very interesting. When we come back, Kim, I want to ask you a little bit about maybe some of the emotional baggage, as it were, that both mothers and fathers face, perhaps individually, perhaps they face it together, but biological parents, the baggage that they're stuck with in the aftermath of an abortion. Kim Cotola, host of Cradle My Heart, the program Sunday evenings at 8 here on the Faith Radio Network. She's got an extraordinary guest with her this Sunday evening, and we'll continue with Kim in just moments. It's now 7:15. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Make that 7:18 here on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to it. I'm Austin Hill here weekdays 6 till 8. Coming up just about 20 minutes from now, Dr. Richard Land from Southeastern Theological Seminary joins us to talk about the state of marriage among young adults in the church. And we mean in the church very universally, very broadly here in the United States. That's coming up at about 7:35 this morning. Kim Cotola hosts Cradle My Heart, a program Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network. She's on our guest line right now as we talk about a piece that she's authored, The Bond Between Mother and Child That Lingers Long After an Abortion. Now, she's got a prolific speaker guest on her program this Sunday evening. Kim, you said something very powerful, and I want to make sure that all our listeners hear this. You said that in cases where a child is aborted, oftentimes that strips the father, the biological father, strips him of his masculinity. Tell us about that. You've observed this firsthand. You've seen a lot of people suffer in the aftermath of an abortion. What are you observing about the men?
Well, if a man is a bystander of abortion, I think it's easy to see that, you know, the powerlessness that he feels, of course, would diminish a man in his feelings of being manly. People don't understand that there have been 8 separate court challenges from married men trying to get the courts to intervene if they wanted a child who, but their wives did not. And the courts have ruled in every case that a woman's right trumps the rights of the man and the right of the child to be born. And so it's easy to see how the masculinity is threatened there. I think it's a little more, it's a more subtle dynamic when a man is the sponsor of the abortion. He seems to be asserting himself. He may even be coercing her. And we know that men do get violent. One of the most dangerous times for a woman to be vulnerable to assault is when she's pregnant. But these men also, I think, have diminished masculinity because, you know, the child is the product of their body as well. And so to simply destroy that child, it can't happen without something of him being destroyed as well.
Very interesting. Now, I will make a confession here. I probably would not have been able to understand the gravity, the profundity of what you're describing here, were it not for the fact that back about 4 years ago, I became friends with a gentleman who's in the Pacific Northwestern United States, runs one of the most prolific nonprofit pro-life advocacy groups in our country right now. But he arrived at his pro-life position because back in the late 1970s, he was in a marriage where both he and his wife were very very much champions of the pro-choice cause and very much champions of abortion rights and for women and so forth. But then they ended up getting pregnant, and the wife says, I don't want to birth this child. I'm going to have an abortion. And my friend, David is his name, he says, wait a minute, that's my child. And quite literally, the marriage breaks up. The husband is left devastated, realizing he has no legal recourse, as you're describing. And all of a sudden, the profundity of life at conception, this friend of mine, David Ripley is his name, he had the scales falling from the eyes experience in an Apostle Paul sort of way. And now, as I said, he has devoted his life to pro-life causes. But quite literally, here for years, he had devoted himself to championing the right to choose, so to speak. But then when his spouse, his own wife, chooses differently with his own flesh and blood, and his choice doesn't matter anymore, he saw how painfully and how vividly the abortion process can devastate even he himself, but men and women both. So I've observed this firsthand. I've gotten to peek into the lives of private individuals who have suffered with this, both men and women. And it's very, very real what you're describing. What's the pathway forward for women and men, either one, that are left in the aftermath of an abortion?
Well, we need to heal. We need to have a new mind regarding all of this, you know, because women may argue, Austin, that, well, you know, that's fine for your friend, but some men are abusive and women need to flee and have the autonomy and, you know, we can come up with all sorts of scenarios. But the answer, of course, is that both husband and wife would be yielded to the love of Jesus Christ to make the godly decisions within the marriage. And then when they do that, I believe, you know, in God's model for marriage, wives come under the authority and the protection of their husbands. But none of that can be discerned without the Spirit, without the Holy Spirit. And so, you know, we've got to strengthen marriage. We've got to promote godly marriage in terms of the big picture there. But once the abortion has happened, we need to help people understand that there has been a loss, that this was not just tissue, that this was not just a choice, that there was a child, and that just as if a child had died after birth, we would see that there would be a need for healing rituals and funerals and a need for community to come around us and us to process that experience with caring conversations. We need to do all those things after abortion as well and resolve whatever part of it we are accountable for in terms of repenting and, you know, getting at the guilt of the experience as well.
Kim Cotola, her program Cradle My Heart, you'll hear it this Sunday evening, 8 p.m. Central Time on the Affiliates of the Faith Radio Network. Kim will be speaking with her invited guest, Vicki Thorne, and we're looking forward to that. Kim, thanks for what you do. Thanks, as always, for joining us here in the morning. We look forward to Sunday evening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Great to speak with you.
Always a pleasure. 7:24 on the Faith Radio Network. Still to come, we'll take a look at the state of marriage in evangelical churches across America. Dr. Richard Land, president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, he'll join us. And also a new Left Behind motion picture, a new version of the previous motion picture about ready to be released. Well, some people don't think it's necessarily a good idea. We'll talk about that and concerns about the Ebola virus on the North American continent. All this and more just ahead. You're listening to Austin Hill in the Morning. It's 7:25. On the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8. And thank you for being here with us. Thank you for your support of Faith Radio. You can find us anytime on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. So what's the real status of marriage as it pertains to young adults in the United States of America? And then as a subset of the United States of America, what about young adults within the church? Now, we've talked about marriage quite a bit here on our program. Just last week, we got the true scoop on divorce rates. It has been commonly repeated over the last couple of decades or so. 50% of all marriages end in divorce. That's not true generally across our culture. That's not true within the church either. However, it is the case that young adults, people of the millennial generation, are delaying marriage for periods of time. Joining us to talk about this, Dr. Richard Land, a prolific voice among Christians and public policymakers in our country. He's the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's on our guest line now here on the Faith Radio Network. Dr. Land, welcome to our program. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you. Good morning.
Good morning. You have been a prolific voice on the issue of marriage and its definition, the ways in which that pertains to public policy, what it means for the church. Tell us, as you understand it, why is it that younger adults in the millennial generation are delaying marriage? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, first of all, the fact is that they are. I mean, it looks like the millennials, unless they start getting married really rapidly in their 30s, we're going to have less than 70% of men and women who will actually ever get married in the millennial generation. I mean, think about that. 30% or more will not get married. I think that one of the overwhelming reasons is that this is the largest generation in history to have their children of divorce. They come from broken homes. And we know, there's lots of research now that shows that divorce of parents is not a trauma that children get over quickly. It just has cascading, continuing pain and results in their lives. Mm-hmm. They're fearful of making commitment. They're still hurt by the betrayal of their parents' trust. You know, I had one professor at the University of Texas at Austin tell me, he said, you know, he says, I've had students say to me, I had a young man say to me last year, he said, I want more than anything in the world to find a woman and marry her and love her for life, but I don't think that's possible. My parents couldn't do it.
Very interesting.
And so I think the biggest reason is that they are the children of divorce more than any generation previously, and the children of illegitimacy. I mean, you know, this is a generation that was being raised when the illegitimacy rates jumped from the teens into the 41%.
Sure. Well, speak to us, if you would, if we have this 30% or more of this millennial demographic that will never be married, and I think that's a correct interpretation of what you just said there. If that is the case, does that necessarily mean, Dr. Land, that they won't procreate and have children?
No, it doesn't. It means they'll have fewer children. It means that that their children will also be have a higher potential to be malformed and scarred emotionally because they don't have the mother and the father that God intended for all children to have.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, mountains of evidence that show that children who are reared in a two-parent family, a mom and dad who are married and stay married to each other, have enormously better outcomes as healthy adults than children who are raised in broken homes or in single-parent homes. You know, just take the poverty rate. If you're born into a home with a mother and a father who are married to each other and they stay married to each other, you've got a 5% chance of ever being in poverty. If you're not, you have a 35% chance of being reared in poverty. That's a 7 times greater chance.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Richard Land, he's president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's with us on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network as we talk about marriage among the millennial generation. You have said before, and you've addressed over the last decade or more a broad array of public policy issues, but you have said before that government in many ways is replacing the role of the spouse in the context of households and relationships. How is government replacing the role of a husband or wife?
Well, if you remember back during the 2012 campaign, the Obama campaign had a advertisement for a girl named Julia who goes through her whole life and the government helps her get her college degree. The government helps her while she's getting started in life. She has a baby and the government helps her with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes on into retirement. They never even mentioned a husband. The government took the place of the husband. There's a reason why 60% or more of single women in this country vote for the Democratic Party. They look for the government to be the husband they don't have and replace the husband they don't have when it comes to income assistance, when it comes to social assistance. And, of course, this is putting an enormous strain on government because the whole social welfare system is based upon the assumption of a population pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
With more younger people supporting fewer older people. But when you abort 54 million babies, then you have an inverted pyramid. And that's why there's such a tremendous strain on Social Security and Medicare, because you have fewer and fewer people who are contributing to more and more retirees.
Well, I remember very well, very vividly, the story of Julia, the hypothetical fictitious character that was in YouTube videos and all over the Internet back 2 years ago. How do you respond to the person, Dr. Land, that says, well, listen, this is what a compassionate government does. Of course the government is there for me. If I'm a young woman, for example, when I'm born, the government helps my mom raise me. The government helps me go to college. The government helps me find a job. And the government supports my own child. That's what a compassionate government does. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would say that a compassionate government has a safety net, but a compassionate government tells people the truth. And the truth is that the normal state, the healthiest state for human beings, is to be married. Married people who stay married live longer and are healthier, men and women. It's the best thing for moms and dads. It's the best things for husbands and wives. It's the best thing for sons and daughters. And we ought to be a wise and good government would be promoting policies that promote and help sustain marriage rather than having a tax system that penalizes marriage and rewards illegitimacy.
Very interesting. Dr. Richard Land, he's the president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's our guest here on the Faith Radio Network. Dr. Land, I hear what you're saying about the inverted pyramid that you're describing just moments ago. And I look at that from a fiscal and economic standpoint. And I said, that's just unsustainable. That's a civilization that is in serious trouble and headed for some sort of crisis. I don't know when. I don't know how bad it is. I don't know. But the current trajectory is unsustainable. What role does the church play broadly and universally here in the United States of America? What role do we as Christians play to try to correct the ship if we can?
Well, the first thing I think that we need to do is we need to point out that the whole budget issue and the increasing deficit that is largely the result of entitlement programs is generational theft. It's a simple moral issue. We are stealing our children and our grandchildren's future. We are putting upon them enormous debt that will soon, if it's not stopped in the very near future, will permanently foreclose their economic futures. They will be the first generation in American history to have a lower standard of living than their parents because they will be paying off our debts. Just to give you an example of how bad it is, it took us from George Washington through George W. Bush to get a national debt of $10 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to double that during Mr. Obama's presidency. Double it. Double it. When he leaves office, we'll have a $20 trillion debt. And how do you do that? Since the end of World War II, the American government, on average, has spent about 20%, 20 to 21% of the gross domestic product. That's how much the government has spent. Under Mr. Obama, it went up to 25%, mm-hmm. and that extra 4% was all borrowed. And so we're literally stealing our grandchildren and children's future.
Dr. Richard Land, he's the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. We'll continue with him in just a moment. Dr. Land, stand by. Some more questions in the offing. Dr. Land commenting on the state of marriage among millennials and the role of the Christian church in America. We'll talk more in just a moment. 7:45, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Our program continues.
Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
7:46 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Our guest is Dr. Richard Land, president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary, as we talk about the current state of marriage among the millennial generation in America. Dr. Land, at times I get the sense that I can walk into certain churches, certain local churches in certain regions of the country, and I can look on one side of the aisle and I can see the young adults, the 18 to early 30-something generation, the millennials, and then I look at, Gen Xers, baby boomers and such on the other side of the aisle. And I get the idea that there's a culture clash. They are speaking wildly different languages at times when it comes to the subjects of marriage and relationships and sexuality. Is indeed there kind of a culture clash or a profound misunderstanding anyway among the generations when it comes to marriage and relationships, would you say?
Well, there usually is.
One
of the nice things about getting to be my age is you understand some things. I'm a baby boomer, and there was a huge gap between me and my parents, between the World War II generation and the baby boom generation. I mean, huge. And there wasn't as much of a gap between the boomers and their children, the busters. They really wasn't. But they're the millennials. There is a gap. There's no question. They've been raised in a different society. They've been raised in a society certainly far less traditional than the one that I was raised in as a baby boomer.
Right.
They, as I said, disproportionately, they are the children of divorce, even those that are in church. Because as you know, the church I grew up in Houston, Texas, we had one divorce lady in the church. One. There's not a church in America of any size where that's the case today.
Sure.
And so, they have different, I find that I frankly think that we have done a very poor job of discipling the millennial generation. I find them to be, appallingly unaware of many biblical truths and applying those truths to the social issues of the day. For instance, I find a disproportionate number of Christian millennials who are libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you square libertarianism with the command to be salt and light.
I suppose that depends on one's definition of libertarianism. I mean, that could imply
The idea that this is immoral, but it shouldn't be illegal. People ought to have the right to do what they want to do. I think the government has an obligation, and as Christians, we have an obligation to tell the government that they have an obligation to limit and control substances that do significant damage to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking right now of marijuana. There's more evidence than there's ever been that marijuana destroys brains. And particularly young people's brains.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting ready to legalize it nationwide. That is insanity.
I would certainly concur with you on that. Dr. Land, at the end of the day, what is maybe one thing, one crucial thing, maybe a first step kind of thing that you would want those listening to our conversation to know? When you talk about the millennial generation being appallingly unaware of some real basic biblical truths, a lack of discipleship among that demographic, what's one thing you would want pastors and even lay leaders within the church to understand about the way forward?
We've got to preach the Bible from the pulpit and teach our people, and we've got to apply it. The Bible says it's not good for man to be alone. That was before the fall. It wasn't good for man to be alone. We need to talk about what the Bible says about marriage. We need to talk about the fact that this is the normal state that God intended for most people.
Mm-hmm.
To be in a one-woman, one-man relationship for life. And that is the environment in which he intended for children to be raised. And, I keep thinking as I talk about this issue about former Vice President Al Gore.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore, at his father's funeral, said something which I thought was profound. He said, "My father was the greatest man I ever knew." And he said, children who grow up in homes with strong fathers have a sense of security that other children don't have. He said, "I always knew from my earliest memories, from the way my father treated my mother, that my father was never going to leave.
Isn't that something?
Every child deserves that. And to the extent that we as Americans don't provide that kind of security to our children, we're engaging in collective societal child abuse. I was coming from Charlotte to Nashville the other day, and I stopped at a service station.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was getting back in my car, I saw two cars pull up from opposite directions. A woman in her 30s got out of one car. A man in his 30s got out of the other car. A man had a four-year-old boy in a car seat. And this couple was clearly not on good terms. And the little boy was just inconsolable. He was crying. His father was hugging him. It was clearly a transfer from father custody to the mother's time of custody. And that little boy was just brokenhearted that he was having to leave his father and go back to his mother. And I'm sure he's going to be just as brokenhearted when he goes from his mother back to his father. And I thought, you know, those two parents, you know, couldn't they have worked out their difficulties? Couldn't they have made a stronger commitment? This is emotional child abuse for this little boy.
Right. Dr. Richard Land, president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, a prolific voice in our culture today. Dr. Land, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time and your thoughts. We look forward to reconnecting again very, very soon here on our program.
Thank you.
Good to be with you. 7:53, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday, 6 till 8. Our program continues momentarily. Portion of the program here on the Faith Radio Network. Isn't that right? We planned this right. Right, Aaron? Aaron McIntyre on the other side of the glass booth here at the Faith Radio Network studios. 7:55. Thank you for listening, and thanks for being here. I'm Austin Hill. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. I'm a Toby Mac fan, by the way. I sort of connect with him. I identify with him. Both of us are Anglo, but have very, non-Anglo musical tastes and preferences and such. And you're laughing at me. Why are you smirking at me? I'm kind of a Anglo. I'm white, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I appreciate the musical styles that emanate from the African-American community, shall we say. Okay, I'll come in from the ledge and get over with that. Anyway, thank you for being here. I'm Austin Hill, weekday morning, 6 till 8, and coming up on tomorrow's program, I'm really looking forward to this. We've got a couple of very very important guests, I would say, that I hope you'll join us for. First, we'll talk about understanding health care and health insurance from a distinctly Judeo-Christian worldview with the president of what is known as the Christian Medical and Dental Association. The gentleman is Dr. David Stevens. He himself is a medical doctor. Imagine that, a medical doctor weighing in on the policy issues surrounding medical care. I find that to be refreshing. Rather than people with law degrees and MBAs and people who are elected to public office saying, well, here's what healthcare looks like, I like to hear about it from a doctor's perspective. And in my view, we don't give medical doctors and healthcare practitioners nearly the respect or the esteem that they are due in our society today. But anyway, Dr. David Stevens joins us from the Christian Medical Association tomorrow on our program. And John Stone Street, who you hear regularly, actually several times a week here on the Faith Radio Network, with the Breakpoint program, the short-form programming feature that we air on the Faith Radio Network. John Stone Street, I think probably, in some sense, kind of shocked a lot of people last week with one of the Breakpoint features, and some of the things that he had to say about the redefining of marriage, and in particular, redefining marriage legally in our country so as to include same-sex couples and those kinds of things. We've asked John Stone Street, and by the way, I found what he was saying to be very refreshing. He's actually looking to the church, to the Christian community, and saying there's some things about us that need to change in this context. So we've invited John Stone Street from the Breakpoints Ministry to join us coming up tomorrow morning here on the Austin Hill in the Morning program to address some of these things. I hope you'll join us. Both these gentlemen have some, I think, very important things to say, and they're important things that need to be heard. So join us for that. Also, more on the anticipated release of a new version of the Left Behind motion picture. Why are some in the world of academia and even in pulpit ministry saying, yeah, okay, go see it if you must, but you don't have to, and it's not the only interpretation of Scripture. Very different reaction in the expectation of this film re-release, different from what happened 14 years ago when the original came out. We'll see you tomorrow. I'm Austin Hill. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.